Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Syndication Station, the podcast where we watch old television shows with our audience, ask you what we thought about them, what you thought about them, and then we talk about them on our show. Not your show, our show.
Well, it's kind of your show, too, because everyone's involved.
Everybody's invited.
It's the fans' show.
It's the third episode. We're already giving it away. Just take it. I don't want it anymore. Take it. Go.
Come on down. Get in here, guys.
My name is Mike, and joining me are, as always, are Dom and Josh.
Hello.
Hello. This week my story is called I Watched the Twilight Zone.
You guys might recognize Dom and Josh's voice from the Fantasy Fiction podcast.
Or your dreams.
Whoa.
Just kidding. Nightmares. Yeah.
And if you know me from anywhere, I'm sorry. I'd like to apologize for that. So I'll try to be in your life less from now on. Just the podcast you're listening to now. All right, guys. So we watched an episode of The Twilight Zone for this week's episode of Syndication Station. But before we get into that,
right,
guys, how was your week? What'd you guys do this week?
Well, Mike, I spent yesterday throwing bananas at a clown.
Living the dream.
Hashtag confirmed humans.
Confirmed humans.
Sorry, that's a little inside baseball there. But I did a commercial for Adult Swim. And in that commercial, I was like, just then I was like, oh, can I talk about it? And then I was like,
right.
No one that was there is going to listen to this. But they do these commercials for products that are, they're basically a minute and a half long sketches that are product placement, but they're funny and they're written by the Adult Swim guys. And I play a stagehand in a weird late night talk show. You might have seen my Die Hard one before.
I did see that.
But yeah, I did. I'm doing one tomorrow. I did one today, but yesterday is what I did. I sprinted to a stage and threw bananas at a clown like 20 times.
That's fantastic.
Did they have the peels on them?
Yes, they did, and sometimes they exploded, and I definitely stepped on one. And
did you fall? Like in the? Is that a real thing? If you step on a banana, do you fall?
I'm in a body cast right now.
Did it make the whoop, 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 and your feet like kick on the floor before like you like, ended up landing on your shoulders?
Yes, three are dead.
Is your mustache in a cast too?
Actually, I don't have a mustache this time, and I think partially it's because they forgot to buy one, but.
What do they do when you're in a body cast about your wiener? Do they, like, cut a hole out for your wiener and then there's sort of, like, a rag over that sucker so no one sees it? Because how do you pee?
That is a great question.
I think it's like an astronaut spacesuit. I think you just go.
Ew.
Yeah, you probably just go.
Yeah, you just fill it with pee. That's how you stay warm.
It smells like a vet in there after a while.
You should probably, did Evel Knievel write a... an autobiography? He probably broke his wiener once.
I'm not reading anything. I'm not getting into all that. I already do a podcast where I have to watch television. Now you want me to read?
Josh,
it's with the theme of the episode, folks. What did you do this week, Josh?
I watched a documentary called Mythic Journeys. And
yeah, but hey, tell me about that right now, because I saw that, and I saw that at work that you sent me that.
Yeah.
I really want to watch it. What is it about?
Well, it made me think of you and Mike. It made me think of both of you guys, because, like, all right, so it's like all these, like, I don't know what you would call them, philosophers or you know, like Deepak Chopra, whatever he is. What's Deepak Chopra? Like a guy, a smart spiritual guy?
A man.
Sort of.
He's a man.
He's a man.
Right.
And a bunch of other, like, kind of like humanities people.
Humanzies?
Humanzies. confirmed humanzies. Talking about, like, how myths shape, like, our life and, like, why they're still important to us today, even though most people don't really even think about it, you know, like they don't think it matters to them. And the whole thing is like it's animated and it's like claymation of it's really cool of this one story that goes through the whole documentary about this king. And he has like the sorcerer tells him to like go cut this body down from the tree, and the body's alive, and it tells him all these myths, like. And in the end, like it's like its own myth. So it's really cool, and you should check it out. It's on Netflix if you want.
Absolutely. What's it called?
Mythic Journey? Let me look it up.
Sounds
really
good.
Quickly.
Sounds like it's the hero's journey plus Unbreakable plus those parts from Harry Potter that are kind of claymation-y. I don't know.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's really neat. It really like said something to me.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm way interested in that kind of stuff. I'm way into, dude, honestly, guys, if you ever have the opportunity, watch Ken Burns' National Parks.
Yeah. Yeah.
It will make you cry.
It's great.
It makes it brings sublime. A tear to my eye.
It absolutely is. Yeah. It's sublime, man. It's he's a phenomenal filmmaker.
He is a phenomenal filmmaker. I love baseball as well. Mm-hmm. I would love to watch baseball on this show maybe one time.
I would love to do that too.
I think we could do
it's
that.
It's honestly, like, I go back and watch it. It's beautiful.
Yes, it is. It is.
Also watch The Natural then, because I was super into it at that
point. Oh, dude, I have The Natural on DVD. You just reminded me.
Yeah, man.
Just watch that.
So good.
It's I love great. That movie.
All right, so then
what did you do?
I did something. I just realized nobody was going to transition to me, so I just started talking. This week, I spent all week looking for that Malaysian flight, and I'll tell you what, I found, with the help of Josh Anderson, I found Lon Duck Dong's car, but I was watching some more X-Files, and I was like, oh, so aliens, you know, we all watched the X-Files, we put it in, like, the social subconscious, and like, right. Aliens monitor our thoughts, obviously. And they were like, okay, so Mike's watching the X-Files. Let's abduct an airplane. I don't know what you would say about it. Abduct an entire airplane. Yes. And aliens took it. And now I don't sleep at night because I'm terrified of a TV show from 20 years ago. And
I'm scared.
You guys, I didn't know where to go with that. I was waiting for everybody to laugh because I'm really scared and I wish somebody would come over and sleep with me.
That's
an open invitation. Take it.
I have a friend who's not you that is legitimately actually scared of aliens.
I have a friend who's not like doing a bit.
He's a legit scared of aliens for real.
I have a friend that's like that too. Although, guys, Fire in the Sky is a terrifying
film. That's the scariest movie made ever. It's the scariest fucking movie, man. And it's like, listen, I don't want to. Like, come on. They already.
Guys.
We're watching the show. We're watching X-Files. They abduct a plane. We're going to talk about Fire in the Sky. They're going to abduct, like, a building next. That's what's going to happen.
God damn it.
A whole building.
They're just going to abduct Mike and be like, this show's over. We're tired.
We're done. That's it. It's over. That's all I did all week was look for that airplane. I didn't find it, guys. I don't know if you know or not. I didn't find the airplane. So,
where did you look? Everywhere? Because apparently it could be anywhere.
I'll tell you where I looked. I looked in the hamper because that's usually where I leave things to start.
Oh, yeah.
And then I looked under the couch cushions. Didn't find anything there except for an M&M that was delicious. And then I looked in my car, in my glove compartment, and there was a gun in there.
Weird. You don't own one of those. That's weird.
I totally don't own a gun.
And then you looked, and there was a black car with men in black suits in it, and they drove away.
And they drove
Dude.
Away.
Dude. Oh, my God.
And I looked back, and the gun was actually it was a sex toy. Yeah, it was a banana. It was a banana-shaped sex toy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've been under mind control this whole time. When is this going to end? When are we going to talk about Twilight Zone?
Let's get right into it.
When are we going to stop doing this, please? All right, guys. So this week we watched an episode, the season 2 finale. Instead of watching a pilot episode of The Twilight Zone, a series from 1959, an anthology series, which we'll get into in a second, we decided to pick, as Dom called it, a deep cut from the series, something that's maybe not widely regarded as one of the best episodes. The show has won so many accolades and has been listed so many times as the greatest, best, most, you know, the hyperbole around the show is innumerable. So it's been nominated or awarded so many times, it's not even really worth our time to go into. But
it's been nominated so many times, it's a crappy show.
It's a crappy
it
show.
It went around
it
the
went
circle.
Back around. And it's won Hugo Awards, and it's been honored by, like, the Writers Guild, et cetera, et cetera. So
it's the best show ever made.
It's probably the best show ever made. It's the best show that's ever graced the small screen. And
yes.
There are episodes that are widely regarded, that are highly visible, that have saturated pop culture, that are freely accessible to everybody, hopefully now that we've opened up the floodgates of watching The Twilight Zone. And we highly encourage you to watch those episodes. They're as good as everybody says they are, but we wanted to pick an episode that wasn't supernatural in nature.
Wasn't parodied a million times.
Right, isn't its own punchline. You know, even though there are no aliens or spaceships in this, as our last two episodes had, we thought that this episode of the show was worth talking about because it has some really interesting themes, and also because it's just a really great example of excellent television. And that's what our show's about. That's what Syndication Station's all about. Guys, let's get into it. The Twilight Zone, the series. Let's talk about that first before we talk about the episode.
Let's do it.
Josh.
Yes.
You're going to go second. Dom, you go first. Go.
The Twilight Zone is such an important show. If you've never seen an episode, you know at least 10 episodes what they are about and what the reveal is. That's how important of a show it is because it's embedded in our culture.
Yep.
How much the writing has influenced all the series who have drawn, you know, inspiration from it for the last half century.
I would say that the Twilight Zone is probably the great granddaddy to all of the shows that you will be seeing on this podcast. Not all of them, but a lot of them, especially Star Trek, and of course the X-Files. The X-Files wouldn't exist without this show.
Absolutely not. Have you seen that reel that's like Rod Serling pitching the show to advertisers?
I've never seen that.
No. I've never seen it either. Tell us about
it. It's a really interesting thing. He's like smoking a cigarette and he's like, hey, everybody, we're going to be showing this show and it's going to be different and it's going to deal with different themes and stuff, but we think people are going to really like it because this is a show that really took a chance in being like every week it's going to be a new thing and it's going to be paranormal and it's going to be spooky. Like back then people were like, I don't want my deodorant being advertised in this show, but it's too spooky. No one will buy it.
No one's going to buy my cigarettes if they're afraid a ghost is going to come out of them.
That sody pop is haunted. I'm not buying that sody pop. But yeah, go ahead, Dom, what were you going to say?
But that was a real fear that advertisers had, so they had to make this reel that was like, hey guys, no, like, give us a chance, please.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it is one of the, if not the most important show of all time.
Yeah. It really had its fingers on the pulse of like they have really interesting science fiction or science concepts that were going around at the time. About like this was during the atomic age, during the Cold War, a million interesting like outside influences on the writing itself. But the show, like you said about taking a risk, is, you know, in a time when everybody was watching Leave It to Beaver, this was a show that was like, hey, let's explore the human condition through philosophic spooky tales. And it's so cool that like you know, it lasts as long as it did. The vital stats started in 1959, ran for 5 seasons on there were only 3 or 4 channels back then. 3 actually, I think.
There was CBS, ABC, and NBC. ABC, CBS, NBC, the Dick channel that just showed a gross 60s penis all day.
Dude, you don't want to have anything to do with that channel. Let me tell you.
And the WB.
And the WB, weirdly enough.
In common, what is WB?
And unlike other television shows that we've watched so far on our show, this was an anthology series, which anthology series were popular on radio at the time, not unlike our show right now you're listening to, the podcast you're listening to. And an anthology series means that instead of it being a serialized narrative that is some way connected from episode to episode over the length of a season or the series, each determined iteration, whether it be an episode, an arc, or a miniseries, stands on its own, usually with different plots, settings, characters, and but they're all usually interconnected with either under a similar premise umbrella, a theme, or in this show's case, just a tone. That's pretty much the only thing that connects episode to episode is the tone.
Right. That like there aren't even like
spooky.
Right, there's like ghosty. It's kind of like there's like ghost stories for adults, but like also there's some really I would say important things that this show did. Yeah. Like it dealt with like human fear a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The human condition was a huge part of the show, and I mean, I don't know, I think this is probably the television show to end all television shows, and it happened like pretty fucking early in the history of the medium.
This isn't far after like Uncle Milty basically invented TV. Like TV as it was not the TV we watch today, and when TV was like in its proto form, you know, this was coming maybe 5 years after that. Yeah. And they were like, hey, you know what? It's 1960. Let's talk about race on network television. Right. And that's what this show did, which was incredible.
The show always had a message, I felt like, in some shape or form, and sometimes the message is a lot lighter because it's more of a paranormal episode, that episode where the spacemen are, or like the woman's house is being invaded by the spacemen, and then it pans over the ship. Oh my God, United States of America! Right, what planet was that?
The show would sometimes put on display like ironies just to give you like a perspective shift to be like, hey, isn't that kind of fun to think like, what if?
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. But then
this episode in particular goes ahead and Rod Serling basically tells you, he goes, hey guys, let's never become this.
Yeah.
Because this is why, and it never will become that, and it will always fail.
Right.
And that, at the time, not a lot of shows went that far. So not only was it like, oh, I don't want my cigarettes being advertised on the Go show, it was also like, I'm sorry I'm doing a Southern accent to anyone.
Don't apologize.
It's just a fun accent to do.
There's people in Pennsylvania that talk like that.
True.
Nobody who listens to this show talks like that.
But there was also the tone that was like, I don't want my show, I don't want my cigarettes on the show that has black people in it.
Right, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So this show did a lot of things.
Crossed a lot of boundaries. And so the anthology format worked really well, or works really well, with like fantasy, science fiction, horror and mystery shows, like thrillers.
It's weird.
Like this.
It's almost like some people do a show like this also.
It's almost,
I mean, obviously not this.
Every Moon's Day.
I was about to say.
It's fantasy fiction.
Let me just transition seamlessly over to a fantasy fiction plug real quick. Guys, do you know any shows that people can listen to on a podcast that are anthology fantasy show?
I don't want my ghost cigarettes.
I don't want my floating hat advertised on a god dang show about orcs. Well, I would say almost every one of my projects that I have an idea for is always some sort of like serial, or not serial. What? How do you describe the show? My
anthology is the term, I guess. Yeah.
That's how every one of my ideas or projects that I start to do always revolve around the idea of every episode we're going to see something different.
Right.
And that's because of the Twilight Zone.
Right.
I always want to surprise people with something new and a different world and different people.
Yep.
Because it's boring to see the same guy like not die every episode.
I'm sorry. Josh,
I was gonna say that's what a lot of like television, I mean, today still is, but especially in the 60s, like, I mean, they was, like you said, Leave It to Beaver, like that was an entire show based on this is how wonderful being an American is.
This is how wonderful about how being a white
child American
is.
Right, right, exactly.
I have a family. Aren't I fortunate? Right. Oh my God.
Right. And this show was like, here's what it would be like if people were animals, which they are.
yeah. It's a real, you know what, there were plenty of shows that came before this one that followed that format, and there were a ton of shows that obviously came after the show that followed that format, but they took cues specifically from this show. Shows we might end up watching that our audience may already be familiar with if this format seems new to them, or if the Twilight Zone in fact is new to them. You guys may have seen Tales from the Crypt, Are You Afraid of the Dark, American Horror Story currently,
Quantum Leap,
but even
Star
True
Trek.
Detective, even Star Trek. And Josh, that brings me to my next point. We had mentioned on our Star Trek episode the idea of a bottle episode.
Right.
And the X-Files has its Monster of the Week episodes.
Right.
And this was an entire series based around bottle episodes. And what a brilliant way to execute it, you know?
I mean, this was just a show created by the only man who could have created it. I mean, Rod Serling is a poet. He's a genius.
He was a genius.
Rod Serling was a fucking paratrooper in World War II and survived two wounds.
That's crazy.
He was shot in the goddamn knee.
Well, that's what happened. He got all fucked up from getting shot. Now he was like, you know what? The world's like this now. And everybody's like, holy shit.
It's interesting. It's interesting because like after World War I, you start to see a lot of art, like Dadaism and all this crazy what, like Dolly, because the world was like, well, the if we could, if humans could create such destruction, like everything's nuts, and in the human race, like in the artistic way, got a little depressed and a little weird.
Things didn't have to be a certain way or the accepted way anymore. It was the surrealist movements, you know?
Right. And after World War II, we started to do the same thing, but we started to question, like, where are we going? You know, because after we saw like what could have happened, like what did happen in World War II, like it was like we need to start to get better.
at being better as people.
I feel like a lot of things from this era are heavy-handed in the anti-war message, but that's because that happened like 15 years ago or something. Right. Like it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
Like this show was made in 1959. When did World War II end, Mike?
1945.
You know, think about our society now reeling from a one-day terrorist attack that happened 13 years ago. And now we're talking about a world at war for the second time in 2 decades.
Right.
3 decades. And it ended with, you know, nuclear weapons being used.
Right.
The world, everything was fucking upside down. You guys both hit the nail directly on the head as far as I'm concerned. People like Rod Serling and other science fiction writers of the day, even fantasy writers too, of the day, looked at us and said, we have to be better. We have to be a better human race. These are the things that we do to each other every day.
Right.
And like, let's file that down to like, you know, the sharpest edge possible and see how deep of a wound it'll open up, you know, with people. Like, see how deep that blade cuts. And there's so like the monsters are due on Maple Street. That's a phenomenal episode of the show just that. In under half an hour, it's like, hey, this is what it's like being a human being and being scared of the unknown. This is exactly what it's like. In a half an hour of entertaining television where commercials sold you cigarettes and sody pop. You know, sody pop. As was the style of the day to say that.
The parlance of the time.
But yeah, man. People like Rod Serling and his contemporaries. Out of this show also came Richard Matheson, who was already a science fiction writer or a budding science fiction writer, and Charles Beaumont, who unfortunately died only a few years after writing for the show. But Matheson, during the show's time, right before the show's time, during the time and afterwards, wrote stories like I Am Legend. He wrote a couple of short stories that were adapted into several different films. And Serling wrote 2/3 of the show. He wrote almost 100 episodes of a 150-episode show. And he also wrote the entire first season by himself, except for, I think, one or two episodes that maybe Matheson wrote with him. And maybe Charles did, too. But then Richard and Charles and Rod all like wrote the subsequent, you know, seasons together and all.
Right.
And it's, man, talk about the guy. He created the show, wrote it, hosted it. Every episode, Rod Serling is either there in presence or there by voice
narration,
to guide you into the episode. Hey, this is the world you're about to enter. And at the end, he's like, this is what you should have taken from it.
Yeah.
I love that he tells you. Like, because there is a higher level and the show does stick with you. You know, sometimes there are – yeah, sometimes a little nail on the head. But there's that fantastic episode. Shit, the name of it escapes me. But the one where the guy dies in the beginning of the episode and then he's going to go to heaven. Seems pretty easy, pretty self-evident. He's like an old country bumpkin, and he's going to follow his dog.
Yeah, he's walking down the road,
He's walking down the road.
I think it is. Yeah, he goes hunting, and he doesn't realize
that he's dying. Yeah, and he's dead. And he goes walking up to this gate, and the guy at the first gate says to him, is like, hey, you're dead. This is heaven. Come on in. And he's like, I don't really – and like his human inquisitiveness, his curiosity, his intrepid nature, even as an old country bumpkin – who's way beyond his years, who thinks he might be dead, says, let me like take stock in my place in the world. Let me see what's around me. Mm-hmm. And then he goes a little further down the road and there's another gate. And at that gate, the guy's like, hey, by the way, this is heaven. That was hell.
Yeah.
And at the early, you're like, oh, that's kind of like interesting. At the end of the episode, Rod Serling's like, a man will walk into hell with his eyes wide open if he's told it's the right way.
Yep.
And you're like, holy fucking
it's
shit.
Brilliant.
Like it's like the whole show is like that. There's 150 episodes that are just like that.
There's really not a bad episode of this show.
There's not.
There are some cheesy episodes where I think that's what this particular episode, I mean, the dude wrote 100 episodes of a show. Some of them are going to stink. a professional baseball player goes out there almost every day.
Right.
And sometimes he doesn't get one hit.
Right. A third of the time he hits the ball.
Right. A third of the time he hits the ball. He's really good.
If he's really good, he fails twice.
Right. Well, I'm saying that Rod Serling batted over 900 on this show then. And for those who don't know, for some of our younger listeners or those who weren't fortunate enough to catch it for years, I'm sure they still do it. The Sci-Fi Channel, when everybody was sort of starved for programming before the 2000s, the Sci-Fi Channel would run a Twilight Zone marathon twice a year, where for 2 full days, 48 hours, they would run the Twilight Zone on New Year's Eve day, and then the day before the 4th of July, and on the 4th of July. And I remember the ratings for it year after year would always be like, everybody just watched it those days.
Yeah.
Everybody had to remember what it's like, how absurd life is. And
that
how,
was, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was really the only place you could watch that show at that point. Cause,
oh, yeah. Before DVDs, I mean, and VHS right. cost a fortune in the 90s, right. you know.
But yeah. it, to go back to...
you go back to whatever I you think want.
I watched a couple episodes this week because I wanted to get myself in the mood because I really do love this show. But one of the episodes is a man, like, it's Western Town, and a man comes back, yeah. and the man he's been chasing is killed.
Yeah.
And... they're like, oh, I bet you won't go see his grave. It's like the town killed him. Not even like the lawman killed him. The town killed him.
It's so good. Like, it's Lee Marvin is the guy. Yeah. Yeah, from the Dirty Dozen.
And you know who else is in that? Lee Van Cleef.
Lee Van Cleef's
awesome.
Yeah, he is. Yep. Yep.
And, but, so, you know, he goes and at the end, I don't want to spoil it, but it's all wrapped up and it's like, it's kind of like, let's get the show over with. We don't have that much time left to explain it. I feel like if that was an hour long, it would have been a really great episode.
Yeah.
But because it was like only a half hour, you have those moments where the show has to try to convince you that this could happen, that these circumstances in this world would happen. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it doesn't quite sell it all the way just because it doesn't have enough time, I think. And that's an episode that suffers from it. And this episode almost suffers from it.
It teeters.
I'm willing to... It teeters pretty hard,
yeah.
but I'm willing to suspend disbelief because, and I'm just going to talk about this point right now.
Let's transition to this episode, The Obsolete Man. Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah. So this episode, if I was that man, you would just beat this man to death, right? You'd be like, I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to find that fucking key, and I'm going to get out of here.
Hold on.
Because you're going to die, and people will be more scared of me if I beat you to death, right? That's the idea. But the man... God, I have weird dogs that live next to me. They sound really weird sometimes. They sound like old men, like, howling. Anyway, I guess the logic of that idea would be that the man would allow himself to be beaten to death and killed, and he wouldn't say a word.
Right.
But, I mean, at the end of the episode, it's in Burgess Meredith's pocket, and, you know...
Well... Like, hold on.
But I'm willing to suspend belief that the man wouldn't take it that far. And maybe that's a world where physical violence it doesn't happen.
The end of the episode, it does. Dom, I will take you to the mat on that point. But before we get there, let me tell everybody a little bit about this episode real quick. Is that all right? Josh, are you okay with that?
That sounds good.
So this episode is The Obsolete Man. It was the season finale of season 2. So the show had some time to stretch his legs by this point. There are a ton of established actors that you'll see appear on the show. Burgess Meredith having had been one of them. He was already a star at the time and also was in pretty much the flagship episode of the show, Time Enough at Last, already. Mm-hmm. So there are actors who make repeat appearances during the series. William Shatner is one of them too. Interestingly enough, Burgess Meredith, both his episodes had to do with reading and the value of – maybe in the age of television, what Rod Serling was afraid was going to become a foregone art form,
right.
or method of information gathering, or
well, in this
building.
Episode, you see the beginnings of the idea of how mass media can ruin a civilization, which is very ironic
since you're watching a TV show. Yep.
Absolutely. It's kind of a bold thing to say, and it's kind of a thing that, we kind of, like, do we live in a world where libraries are closing up and selling their books or giving their books away?
Or burning
libraries
them.
Libraries in schools are shrinking to make room for coffee shops.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
And I mean, it's something happened. It is a thing in our society where someone will proudly announce that they don't read books,
which is like, so anti-intellectual.
Whoa, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You don't read books, dude. Like, I didn't mean to offend you.
What's so insane?
Did a book kill your dad?
Dude, what's so insane about that to me is like people will be like, I don't read. And then they spend their entire day on this conduit to the compendium of all human knowledge that fits in their fucking pocket. Like, you know, I don't read books as often as I used to read books, like physical books. But I read more now than I ever did before.
Oh, yeah. Because
I'm 32. Or maybe because our society has actually grown into, in this information age, valuing the intellectual as opposed to everybody becoming a couch potato like were the fears in the age of television. I remember that was the thing when I was a kid. It was you got to get up off the couch. And people say it now about getting away from the internet, but you can't get away from the internet ever.
Well, the thing is that the internet is really great and really bad because everyone listening, think about how many things you can do. And then think about how many things you could learn in the matter of 5 minutes from a YouTube video. It's kind of really amazing. You don't have to buy a book about the mechanics of your lawnmower or taking care of your, you know, sofa or something. I don't know. Whatever. But, like, you don't have to buy these things anymore because the sofa is a bad example.
The sofa is a great example. Josh, what I'm hearing is that Dom's the chancellor. What Dom wants to beat the shit out of Mick from Rocky. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Look, he needs it. I'm tired of his shit.
Dom is the fucking chancellor. Dom's the fucking Nazis got it right. Whoa, Dom. Whoa.
Go ahead and think about how many things you can do. I can do a lot of things, and I don't think I could if not for the internet. Now, the other hand of that is that there is a website. It's called BuzzFeed and Upworthy. And you know what those websites do? They feed off the convenience of you being in front of the stupid fucking Facebook, and you see an article that's like, dicks on people's faces, 10 images. And you're like, okay, I'm going to click this. I've read that. That's what I read today. I'm a read man.
Right, I'm a reader man.
It's like, no, you're not reading. You're just looking at images. You're not even reading the captions.
Yep. I guess back in the
day, do that for my job. I work at the soup. I don't write articles because nobody reads articles. All of my jokes, I Photoshop into one image, and I can do that, but I don't write articles because no one reads them. Nobody's going to read it.
I was wrong. Dom is Burgess Meredith in this episode. Dom is Romney. He's Romney Guy. Romney Wordsworth. He's Romney Wordsworth.
Romney Words Man.
But guys, the Bible and God.
The Bible.
That's
and God.
Where it comes up, and you're like, wait a second. Hold on. I don't know how I feel about this episode.
Hold on. Cool your jets, and we're going to get there.
Look, I'm driving drunk right now.
Burgess Meredith, too, has graduated to Lighthearted Carlings.
It's a great day when you graduate to Carlings Red Cafe. You're the head of the class when you got a glass of that Carlings Red Cafe. That great, great ale from Canada way.
And now it's brewed lighthearted in the USA.
It's a great day to graduate to Carlings Red Cafe.
Somebody's got to be the designated driver of this episode, so it's going to be me because I'm the best buzzkill ever. All right, guys. Co-starring with Burgess Meredith in this episode is Fritz Weaver. Now, the show was also jumping off point or a springboard for people's careers who it was maybe their first time on television or maybe their first time in a highly visible television series. Like Robert Duvall came out of this. Elizabeth Montgomery came out of this show. Just tons and tons of actors or actresses that, you know, maybe the names don't mean a ton to our audience, but they were either character actors or familiar faces from movies, even to this day, some of them. And in this episode, Fritz Weaver, who plays the Chancellor, we see him in an episode or two of The X-Files in the fourth season, like 40 years later. It's crazy to think about. That's fucking fantastic. I mean, this show really did a lot for people's careers, not just for like the viewers, but also like for the industry too, which is really kind of cool. It set a great precedent for television shows taking chances with young and upcoming actors, not unlike The X-Files, which Giovanni Ribisi came out of, like a ton of actors came out of that show.
Seth Green, I think, is in the...
Yeah, Seth Green, and he has super long hair. It's really funny. It's really fucking funny. But not unlike Star Trek, to compare this to another show that we've already watched on our show. This show, the prime, what would you say, the prime means of conveyance for our actors to get the story across to the audience, since the show is very minimalist, very Spartan.
Dialogue.
Is bravado and dialogue. Yeah. It's like you're watching a stage production. It's a teleplay.
But how about that forced perspective in that first scene?
How fantastic. It's so surreal. Cool.
How about the forced perspective in that last scene? That dude's arms are long as hell.
He
appears in other episodes, but because his arms are so goddamn long, in that shot, in that forced perspective shot, you're like, holy crap, this is like a monster up there.
Yeah, it's so great. This show was sort of going on at the same time as Alfred Hitchcock Presents, which we'll another anthology show, which we'll maybe do some stuff with that. But I just, you know, you said Dadaism earlier, Josh, and I couldn't help but think of Dolly and like this surrealism and like how this episode, like, you know, the low key lighting, the simple sets that were everything, even in black and white, it's very obvious. Everything is monochrome. There's no like life to what you're seeing. It's in the pitch. It's just people standing next to a table, rectangular, angular shapes and everything. Yeah. It really builds sort of an inorganic sense of this world they're living in. And then when you go to Burgess Meredith's room, there are old books bound in leather. He makes his own furniture.
It's organic, yeah. He's a carpenter, you know, that guy from that book that he's reading.
Yeah, that book that he reads. And I'm going to bring up martyrdom.
Yeah,
maybe
martyrdom.
Maybe more than anything in this episode. So this episode is about fascism in a totalitarian state.
Right.
I don't know who wants to talk about that first, because we could go off for an hour. Go ahead. You, Josh, take over. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that this discussion really, like, there's a good comment here by Digital Beeps, and they say, this episode, like a string of Twilight Zone episodes, pretty blatantly alludes to totalitarian / communist fears in the U.S. It's frankly pretty over the top in terms of story. There's very little in the way of subtlety, so I think Meredith and Weaver's sincere performances are really what keep you from dismissing the whole episode as loud propaganda. I don't think the episode is propaganda.
It's conveying a message, but it's not a, you know, it's not an agenda.
Yeah, right. I don't know. Right. I would pretty much buy any anti-fascist or anti-totalitarian propaganda.
I would buy into that also.
Yeah.
but you know, the communist thing, like that was going, that was at the height of the Cold War.
And when people say the Cuban Missile Crisis
is a couple years away.
This was the next thing that was going to kill all of our kids.
Right.
That was the fear.
It was going to kill everybody. And like when people say, like, oh, it was the height of the Cold War, it's like, no, this was the height.
World War III almost happened like 2 years from this episode airing. So, but I think a lot of like the anti-totalitarian like literature and the show, that a lot of that was going on anyway after World War II because of the Nazis. And, you know, I think that I read more into the Nazi aspect of this, even though they say Hitler and Stalin in the beginning. I don't know. But, you know, like Fahrenheit 451, 1984.
That was all going on since
the 30s, you know, since Hitler took over. So I don't know. Again, like you said earlier, Mike, like I buy into this completely because I think it's a good message. And it's a message that it frightens me when people say like, oh, that's so like, whatever. That's not important. It's always important to not be swayed by like totalitarian or fundamentalist views about stuff. You know?
Yeah, go ahead, Dom. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, Josh, you kind of brought that up in the intro with that. Was it a documentary or a film you watched?
It's a documentary. So
like, this is a message that has been told and told and told over and over again in our society, as long as kind of we can remember.
There's been stories, yeah.
Hey, Josh Robb has a comment here that says, this episode reminded me a lot of the book Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. Both deal with the overall theme of society pushing itself forward so much that it has forcibly eliminates what it deems obsolete. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, just thinking off the top of my head right now, I don't know if we've had another story like that recently.
Equilibrium.
Yeah.
which is Fahrenheit 451.
Right.
Serling does a great job of picking up the torch where Orwell and Bradbury, you know, may have like left off and said like, hey, you know, and this isn't, you know, Josh, I'm with you. I don't like all those things you were saying. And Dom, obviously you too. It doesn't ring as jingoist in my head, in my ears. Like, yeah, I'm not like, yeah, America. It's right. It's more like, yeah, people and
humanity,
and,
right.
Yeah, and
freedom,
rational
life.
Thought.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, freedom. These people, like in the episode, they're like, well, we killed 1,300 people in 6 hours, and the guy's proud of that, and it's like,
yeah,
that's,
like, we took care of them. Yeah,
right. That's not something to be proud of.
That's not
terrible. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, that is pretty impressive, though.
1,300 is, I mean, I can barely count that.
Right.
Right. Retzina has a comment that directly relates to that. And it says, it felt like, I was referring to the episode, it felt like it was trying to get a few messages across, but one I picked up on was that everyone is necessary, besides solicitors. and who is to tell you whether or not you serve some type of use in the world.
Right.
If we lost all the janitors and fast food workers right now, we would be kind of fucked.
Right.
And I think that's absolutely true. Like, people try to get, like, people get upset at people at the post office because the line is long and they have things to do and the guy who's doing the mail isn't doing it fast enough. And it's like, hey, man, that guy's doing the mail. Like,
right.
Leave him alone. Like, that's a job we need and he does a good job of it.
Right.
Just, you know, I can't stand, there's nothing. A lot of things bother me, guys. But something that really bothers me is when people are shitty to the guy who takes your ticket.
Right.
Like, the guy just has to take your ticket. It's a job that needs to be done, and he's doing it right now. Don't give him shit, you asshole.
Right. There's a lot of that in that documentary I watched, too, where it's like, you know, we all have to find our own story. We all are living our own hero's journey, and that guy who fucking, you know, sweeps the streets, he's got his own journey he's got to go on. So I think that's a good comment by like Red Zena, that everyone sort of, I mean, you're just like those people. You are those people. Like, you're just not, you know, taking the ticket or delivering mail. But you could be. And your life would be just as meaningful if you were. It doesn't have anything to do with who or
Absolutely.
What you are.
Absolutely.
I'm going to say something.
Say something.
I will say something, piggybacking on that idea. It's like, for those people who sometimes question themselves and they go, well, all I do is push a broom, or all I do is take a ticket. And I don't mean that much in life. But I think what's great, and I think this comes from Star Trek 2, from watching it last week, is that as long as you convey a positive message and you pass that along, then you've done a great job. We are at the world we are at because of the positive ideas that have, you know, been passed along. And,
right.
like, you know, yeah, years ago, it used to be really bad. And civil rights were a big deal. And they still are. But they are a lot better than what they used to be.
Right. Things get better eventually, you know.
You know what's fantastic?
Yeah, go ahead.
Josh, I'm sorry. Let me just want to remark on what Dom said about getting heartfelt in episodes and stuff like that. We're watching a television show that's 50 years old. And look what it's doing to us. We watched 26 minutes of a 50-year-old sci-fi show that we're like, yeah, it's a great episode. It might not be the best, and listen to us talk about it.
Yeah.
There were twice as many comments on the Reddit on the subreddit topic of this episode than had been on any other episode to this point. You know, this show strikes a chord with people, and the themes it talks about or the conversations it tries to have.
Right.
You know, I think that's really interesting. Josh, I apologize. I just
No. That's better than what I was going to say.
Shut
which
up.
I do not remember what I was going to say. But
I fucked up. God damn it.
No,
show's
no,
over,
no.
guys.
I don't know. The show and this episode, I always liked this episode because it
Same.
I was always like very what's the word I'm looking for?
Handsome.
I always liked this episode because I was always very susceptible to this type of story. Because
agreed,
I was like a punk kid, and I was like, you know, fuck authority and like all that shit when I was like growing up. So like, I always thought this episode was really it spoke to me in that sense, but also in the sense that like, you know, this guy, this one man outsmarts and outwits an entire country.
An entire
government.
An entire system.
Right.
That supposedly has it so well buttoned up and everything is so great. And all he does is just not conform. All he has to do is think for himself. And Josh, I agree, man. That's susceptible. Man, I drank this Kool-Aid all the time when I was a kid. I was just like, I'm beating my own drummer. I don't even want to march.
Right. I don't even want to. Who's telling me to march? Exactly.
Yeah. Why do I even have to fucking march? Like, what? Right. Like, you know, it's you know, you gotta think completely outside of the realm of I guess, the establishment. And not to, you know, try to hold on desperately to, like, you know, those punk rock anthems that we all sang when we were teenagers and stuff. You know, I don't know who I'm rebelling against anymore. But at the same time, it's like, you know what, man? Fuck you. You know, I don't know. I agree with everybody. That. Fuck you.
No, I agree
don't
with that.
Tell me how to wear my pants.
Dude, 70-year-old Burgess Meredith is like, I'm going to read this book.
Well, Blue Cellos on the subreddit really echoes that thought. He says, this episode was fantastic, and more than anything was the dialogue between Romney and Wordsworth and the Chancellor, and a fantastic one at that. All of the always ask why and fight the power elements are here, and it was even stronger because of the time this aired, and even though this episode does a lot of explaining the underlying themes, the dialogue and plot still holds up today, partially due to the great actors.
Mm-hmm.
And how about them great actors?
Dude, yeah. When he's talking about, like, the dialogue between the characters and everything, and yeah, it is obviously exposition based. A lot of the episodes were structured like three-act plays. You know, they had to be because of, like, commercial timing. In the structure of network television then, there was no premium channels, and of course there was no, you know, new media where people could sort of just, like, follow any pattern they wanted to. So a lot of the episodes took place in either with one or two sets. Like, usually most episodes you'll see they'll start at a set, they'll go to another set, and then come back to the first one.
Right, because they had to build them.
Right, they had to make them. They were essentially like one-room plays and usually only focused on, like, two or three key roles. But that's what strengthened the dialogue. That's what draws you in, is it's very intimate. It's very personal. You know, it's claustrophobic, which this episode in particular, more than just even a surreal display of, like, a dystopic future or dystopian future, excuse me. More than that, it feels like an anxiety-fueled nightmare.
Sure.
Like, even the Chancellor at the end, it's so bizarre. Like, you know, he just everything he ever believed is dashed away in a single moment. And then he's on the other end. He's on the receiving end of that stick now. And, man, what a fucking nightmare. And it amplifies the theme that's being discussed or the point. And man, what a bunch of great comments from the subreddit, you guys. Fantastic. Yeah, thank you.
Fantastic comment, guys.
I wish we were all in the same room having a dialogue about this show. You know, our show could mirror that. Yeah, we are.
But that claustrophobic thing you said, Mike, I think that even in those last moments of that room where he begs to get out, the viewer doesn't want to be there. We're about to watch the guy we like blow up.
Yeah. We got
to
get out of there. Yeah.
We got to get out of there. We want everyone to get out of there at that point.
Yeah. It's a fucking nightmare, man.
But it doesn't happen. Like, and the guy gets out, and it's really, it is scary. But I think that's an important thing that I didn't really think about, but I realized just now when you brought up the claustrophobic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this episode, the idiom or the maxim that we could go to for this episode is that because, you know, we're talking about all the political overtones and obviously the political ideology and that's probably the more secular dialogue to have. But the real idiom here is that there are no atheists in a foxhole. And, you know, I don't mean to speak on behalf of everybody on this podcast, but I, for one, am an atheist. I don't believe in following any sort of religious, you know, dogma or anything like that. But at the same time, I'm not dogmatic in my approach to atheism. I believe that, I think that people's pursuits of their faiths are not only healthy, but in some cases benefit us as a whole. And
absolutely necessary for some people.
And you know, of course, organized religion is the greatest evil that we've all faced. And I know I'm on the front page of that argument. I agree. But when you are faced with insurmountable odds, or when you realize that you are not in control of the universe, which is you're not, you're not. Like, you know, and I don't want to. Like,
well, you're always not. So
right. Right. I don't want to go dipping off from the atheism thing, which everybody's comfortable with, the total nihilism thing, where it's like, well, nothing means anything and we're all fucked. But like, you know,
if you think that way, go and watch Star Trek.
Go watch. you know, like when, you know, faced with faced with a situation that all the systems and structures and all the beliefs and all the dogmas that the Chancellor subscribes to couldn't solve. They couldn't fix that problem.
He went to God.
He gives himself up to a greater power. He right. wants to be let out. And early in the episode, when Burgess Meredith is on trial, when Romney Wordsworth is on trial, the Chancellor calls him an anachronism. He says, you're out of place. You don't belong here anymore. And I think that, and Josh, you were alluding to it earlier, I think that alluding being, I think actually the correct word semantically because of it being biblical, you know, I think the big thing here, the underlining thing here is about Wordsworth's martyrdom, that he's willing to let himself die to get this message across. And it does. Right. You know, it's the
not
first crack
that,
in the dam.
Yeah, not only that, but I mean, you could literally take take what you believe, your religion of choice, and plug it in. This is only Christianity because it was shot in America in the 1960s.
I believe there's a comment about that too, Josh.
Right.
Dan himself on the subreddit says, I wonder what this episode would look like if, bearing everything else, it was written today rather than 1961.
Right.
And he brings up Islam, which is, I think that picks up right where you guys were talking.
Yeah, I think... if it were written today, I mean, if it were written by Damon Lindelof, it would still be about Christianity. But I think if it were, I mean, yeah, you could pick any pick your religion. It doesn't matter. It's the myth of the story that is the point. Like he's not like Burgess Meredith is not only a believer in what he believes in this episode, but his actions are what he believes. He doesn't kill the
Chancellor.
He lets him go. He has mercy where the Chancellor doesn't. Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly, Josh. Exactly. How about that? Yep.
That's the point. And so it doesn't matter what religion you are, ever. Even if you don't have a religion, you're still a person.
You're a human being.
Right.
And Dom, you know, you brought it up earlier, and this is where I'll take you to the mat. You know, the Chancellor wouldn't. You know, discussing character motivations is. It's a pitfall for two reasons. One, because they're written by real people, and mm-hmm. two, because you know, while we can ask about you know, why the plot goes in certain directions, I think most times asking why characters don't do things, I think is sort of a, you start getting these logical paradoxes, because why do people do anything? But anyway, I would like to submit that perhaps the Chancellor doesn't overpower Meredith. Wordsworth to get the key, or that he doesn't even know he has him, or try to beat out of him, like, you know, how am I going to get out of the room?
Right.
Because his devotion to his belief system is so strong.
It's a test of wills. They both sit down in a seat, and Words man already won because he doesn't care. He knows he's going to die. He's given up. He's let go.
It's not that his system is more righteous, but, you know, obviously that's what we get told at the end. It's like, oh, you know, one is clearly better than the other.
Right.
You know, one benefits humanity and one you know, oppresses it. I'm sorry, Josh, go ahead.
But Words Man wins because, I mean, wins in quotes, because it doesn't matter to him. He's already dead. There's no way out for him. He knows he's going to die. He went into that courtroom in the beginning knowing he was going to die.
He lives in that society. There's only one escape. There's only one escape.
And living in that society is probably worse than dying. So
you know what's interesting too, Josh, where you say any religion is interchangeable? They use the word nirvana twice.
Well, I wrote that down too, because I mean, I know that you guys know this about me, but I'm a Zen Buddhist. So I thought that immediately struck that hits me right away, because I'm like, oh, well, you know, but I also thought of like the title to one of my favorite books by Brad Warner. There is no God, and He's always with you. Is the title of the book, because it's like it doesn't necessarily matter what you believe. It's both at the same time. You can have both of those things. It's not about a belief structure. It's about what you do when you're
absolutely
here.
It's about creating that positive
right
idea or passing on that positive idea. And that's why when people are like, oh, I'm a devout Christian and I love the Bible, like, okay, that's completely fine, because
right
although the Bible says some things that are very controversial to what,
like laser dogs? What is that?
Illegal in 49 states. I'm looking at you, Kansas. Goddamn heathens.
The teachings, not to get too religious, but the teachings of Jesus are very positive ideas.
Right.
You know? So, like, hey, if that's what you need to be a good person and pass those good ideas along, then okay. All right. Then do it. But I can understand a lot of people having a lot of things against religion because of what it did to them or what it did to their families. And I understand. Like, I get that. I've never lived that, but I get that. But I can't. That's why, like, this whole kind of, like, atheism jerk off, like, this circle jerk that's happening now with, like, and I'm going to talk about Reddit because we use Reddit on this show. The atheism subreddit is
it's crazy.
A circle jerk of people being like, yeah, fuck you. Right. God doesn't exist. It's like, bro, like, whose mind are you blowing here?
Right.
You're not
going to
convince someone that God doesn't exist by fucking yelling in their face or, you know, like putting together a Photoshop on the internet. No one's ever going to, like, you know, question their entire belief system just because of something you fucking wrote or some image you shared. Like,
you fall into the same trap as the same trap as this society where this society needs to impress upon everyone else its ideas. And
yeah, stop trying to bully people into not believing in God.
Right.
Like,
that's not going
to
work.
People will never, you know, people will grow out of it eventually, maybe. But the only way they will is by finding it themselves.
Right.
It's exactly the same thing. You can't declare. It's what happens at the beginning of the show. You can't declare an edict. You can't just say
obsolete.
It doesn't work.
You can't say there is no God and be like, okay, we said it, so it's quantifiable now. That's a thing, because you're obsolete. You don't count because I said it.
It's the same thing as saying there is a God. You can't quantify. It's the same thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You can't declare an edict. You have to let people arrive at their own decisions. You have to let people stockpile books in their rooms and become these weird hoarders because maybe they're worth something, you know? Like,
I don't know if Burgess Meredith probably pees in jars and saves them in his closet. I don't know. I didn't see the other rooms because they only built one.
It's nice to know that he learned to read all those books without his glasses. Ooh, allusion to or reference to another Twilight Zone episode.
But parallel universe.
Wow. But, like, you know, when you said earlier about, like, the teachings of Jesus, it's like, yeah, they're so good that Christianity lifted them from 5,000 years of other religions from all over the world. Right. You know, they're just these common sense, you know, ways that we realize that we should be good to one another. And maybe, not to be like junior high school staying up in the middle of the night conversation, but maybe
what this podcast is.
That's exactly what this is. That's exactly what the show is. Shut down right now. Maybe that's exactly what we're doing again now, is we're retelling those stories about how we need to be better to each other. We need to treat each other well. We have to avoid these pitfalls of society, which might seem fantastic at the time. It's like, oh my God, this guy Mussolini makes the trains run on time. Who do I have to put into prison to make my life more convenient? And don't think that doesn't happen in our society today. American culture today. We do it every day. And you might be the person listening just be like, well, I don't do it. Man, take a look at yourself. You know, I'm happy if you don't. I'm happy if you're not one of those people. But, like, I know that there have been times where I've done it. I mean, I haven't, like, you know, oppressed a race of people or anything like that. But, like, you know what I mean?
You've got angry. Everybody gets angry. Right. Man, it's okay because you're human.
Right, one time I saw a janitor and I pushed him over into a fast food worker. And I was like, fuck your burgers. Like, you know? But dude, I don't know. I don't know, man. This show is very thought-provoking in an excellent way. It may seem a little on the nose, sure. It's a television show, of course. Whatever you want to write it off as.
Right.
But it's what you're doing. It's the conversation that you're having, the dialogue you're willing to have.
You mentioned earlier, Mike, how, like, or Dom and Mike, both of you said that it's very claustrophobic.
I want credit.
And you as a viewer, like, feel uncomfortable. That's the whole point of the episode, is they make a whole big deal about, oh, the guys came and put these cameras up. 15 minutes it took them. It's amazing, right?
It's amazing,
and then
isn't it?
Yep. You're the viewer in the audience of the show. Yep. You're at your house watching this through your television in 1959, 1960, whatever.
A guy's gonna die on TV.
Right. You're that
I'm about to watch
person.
That. Yeah.
You're that person, it and it makes you uncomfortable because maybe in that universe, the theoretical audience, it made one of them uncomfortable and it made them think this is barbaric and this is not right.
This can't be. Right. And then the next domino falls, it's the Chancellor, and then where does it end? Right. It's the McCarthy. That, of course, is like the McCarthyism, right. or the
NSA.
or the NSA. Yeah, that was...
Who's listening to this, probably.
What was it? Who was the senator? Was it Joe Kelly who was like, are we at long last at the end of decorum, Mr.? You know, like, they, yeah. like when they were – were they finally like during the McCarthy – let's call them what they were. They were the Red Scare witch hunt.
The witch hunt, yeah.
Of the 1950s. Do some goddamn homework, kids. I don't have time to explain to you what that is right now. You learn that. Or look it up
Wikipedia.
In our school. You go Wikipedia. But like there was also the Animal Farm moment, you know, right. where it's like, well, maybe some of us are more equal than others. Chancellor, right. maybe you're not the person for this job. And then, you know, that domino falls and so on and so forth. And it's just, right. it all comes unraveled. And you know what? Don't think that we don't live in a society that isn't far off. And that's why we need to heed the warnings of these people who can alter our perspective ever so slightly, open the scary door. I know, but still, you know, it makes you think. And here hey. we are. We're fucking talking about this right now. Everybody, we're all talking about it. It's
right.
It's fascinating. It's fantastic.
Because you're not we're absolute. Animals, and we need to be reminded.
Yeah, we need to be reminded, man.
Well, I wrote no that down absolute. For the end when you said it was like a nightmare how he gets pulled away. At the yeah. end, all that those people are animals. At the
they're
end,
they're grunting at him. They don't
They're
say anything. They just they
How
make
about that girl that's like, "Fuck this microphone."
Dude, they don't they just grunt. She's like and she yeah. like pulls him down the table. It's great, dude. It's woo, man.
You know what? Talking Welcome about this episode zone. Made me appreciate it so much more. Although I like it. I had a great time watching it, but I appreciate it that much more reading people's comments and
Absolutely.
Listening to you guys.
What a bunch of great comments. Oh my god. Listen, guys, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just learning how to use Reddit, and I want to read all your comments on all the episodes. I can't believe what a fantastic job our listeners are doing maintaining that Reddit. The guy who's running it, Dom, do you know
Red Zena?
Red Zena, and also a great name, by the way. thank you for like the links for everybody to watch all the episodes we talk about. Tremendous. Goddamn tremendous. It's fantastic, guys. Thank
if
you so
Zena
much.
If Zena had red hair, I would have masturbated my dick off in 1995.
Bringing it all
Dude,
back
Lucy
down
Lawless,
to
man. She's the
dick
truth.
Jokes.
All the way to the dick jokes. But yeah, man.
You know why, guys? Because dicks and farts are funny.
They are.
Forever.
Funny, and they always will,
they
be,
always
funny.
Will be funny.
Farting on your all dick, right. the most funny.
The funniest thing. Dick,
the funniest
dick
thing there is.
Funniest thing
Fart
there
on a dick?
Fart on a dick? Pretty funny.
That's a goddamn nightmare, Dom. What are you talking about? That's a Twilight Zone right there. Yo, so let's – I'm going to pose a question to our viewers before we jump into you know, what we're going to watch next week and uh-huh. where we want to take the show. So my question to everybody is – and also before we do our pitch session with Dom. Mm-hmm. My question to everybody is who had watched this episode, who hopefully will continue to watch Twilight Zone. We're going to revisit the series, watch a whole bunch more episodes. Did the X-Files, specifically their Monster of the Week episodes, continue the legacy of the Twilight Zone? And for those of you who haven't watched those yet, we're going to get to those too. Or maybe you're being an intrepid viewer and going off and watching them on your own. So are there any recent – or so that's part one. That's a part of the question. And are there any recent or current shows that are also spiritual successors to either of those shows, the X-Files Monster of the Week episodes or the – Twilight Zone anthology-esque format. Now, I know people...
True Blood next episode.
I'm sure people will be quick to say Fringe, but I'm pretty sure that was a serial narrative. Maybe they're one-off episodes.
It was.
Tell
I watched
me.
It. Underrated. Okay, it's
right.
pretty good.
Tell me all about it. Josh, tell me all about it. Let's have a whole episode
What,
about
Fringe?
It. And, okay. and if there's a show you know about that is, again, a spiritual successor to either the Twilight Zone or the X-Files Monster of the Week episodes that you would like to tell us about or have us listen or watch and us talk about on the show, please, would you be so kind, listeners, as to point us in the direction of those shows on either the
Cheers.
Subreddit or
– When are we going to watch Cheers?
Or on Twitter or on Facebook. Dom, is there an episode of Cheers you want to watch specifically?
I'll get to it. I got to find it.
Okay. I guess that'll be another week. You know what? Tying together the X-Files and the Twilight Zone, guys, it's almost like we know what we're doing on this show. Almost.
Sometimes we do.
Almost.
Sometimes.
You're entering the vicinity of an area adjacent to a location. The kind of place where there might be a monster, or some kind of weird mirror. These are just examples. It could also be something much better. Prepare to enter the scary door.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Syndicated! Everyone's favorite show!
That's the music. Keep talking, Dom.
By the way, you can play at home if you know how to play.
Yeah.
I forgot to say that last time. Please send us your pitches for your spinoffs or, please send us your ideas for your episode of the show we watched or a spinoff of that show.
Mm-hmm.
That said, guys, can I tell you, I have two spinoffs.
It's two?
Yes.
Unbelievable. Oh, man. We're filling up this whole programming block. It's
all right,
great.
The first spinoff. Are you guys ready for this?
Yeah.
I was going to be like, oh, I want to do a spinoff that's The Twilight Zone, but it's about the host of The Twilight Zone.
Damn you. And that's what mine was going to be.
He's going around. He's doing all these things. Boom. That show already exists. It's called Quantum Leap.
Dom, here's your $1 million, Dom. Here you
go. Yes, give me my $1 million.
I would like to syndicate that show, and I believe that already happened. It's like an episode.
Yeah, but that's what that show is, kind of, but it just puts the character in the situation. Every week we go, I'm in a world. Which world am I in? Oh, right. My God, I'm black.
I'm a black woman, yeah.
You know? Yep. Or like, and then at the end of it, he's like, I learned a lesson. Leap year next week.
Yep. That's
but,
true.
But the other spinoff that I wanted to do, guys, the room blows up. The chancellor, he returns. He goes away. The room. Wait, what is that? That is a hand moving from the rubble.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. He's still alive.
Oh, my God.
We can rebuild him. Bookman.
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 Bookman. Bookman.
We have the books. We have the bindings. We can rebuild them.
Oh my God.
Dude, that's
Book
so
man.
Good.
You don't want to read my books, you sack of shit. Those are sticky notes being shot at.
Dude, that's so good.
Book I thought man. You were dead. You thought wrong. The end.
Those were bullets, not sticky notes this time. Those were bullets.
And then there's a love scene, and he's like, she's like, so am I, she's like, am I going to get some action tonight? He goes, if you want to kiss me on the lips, turn to page 96. If you want to leave, please turn to page 54 and leave immediately.
Leave immediately. Dude, that's so good. I can't pitch anything following that. Are you fucking kidding me?
You stole
Book
mine.
Man.
You stole mine.
The Quantum Leap one?
It was going to be Rod Serling actually gets sucked into the Twilight Zone, but he's Rod Serling. So he knows all of his information that he knows from being a super smart paranormal guy. And maybe someone convinces him he's a Viking.
I was going to say werewolf.
Or werewolf. Kind of like The Prisoner.
Josh, that said, what if that show existed and it looped and looped and looped and looped?
Yeah.
To the point where Rod Serling has been through all these situations before and before, that's how he
that's
knows.
That's how he knows.
He steps forth and he tells you what you're about to watch.
Oh
my God, we are brilliant. We should be the media somehow.
We should make a show about it. I don't know, guys. I don't know if I can make anything. I don't know if I can pitch a spinoff.
Mike, I'll give you the setup, right?
From Twilight Zone that's as good as that. You give me a setup, and then I think I came up with one. It's pretty original, but good.
Okay. Okay.
All right, I'll give you the setup. You guys can play with this. Ready?
Good.
The Chancellor, he's not executed. They throw him out in the wasteland. They're like, we will not dignify you with an execution.
Okay.
You're just going to go
like
waste
dread.
Away. And it's he's dread. Walking. He's walking. He's walking. He comes across a spaceship with an alien in it?
Question mark? Dude.
All right, what happens next, Mike?
The alien's like, I have a book for you. It's called How to Serve Man. And the Chancellor's man, that's awesome. You really want to serve me? He's like, I'm very interested in serving you. Tune into another episode of the Twilight Zone to find out what happens next.
cut to man in a hot tub, and he's relaxing. He goes, you know, a Chancellor could get used to this. A pan out. Or zoom out to reveal he's in a cauldron.
And there's carrots and celery.
And the alien is chopping up carrots.
Hey, what are you guys cooking? It tastes pretty good.
It smells pretty good. And also the chancellor is Bugs Bunny. We forgot that part in the beginning, but that's also... I don't know, man. I think... Tell me what you think of this. All right. Okay. Here's my pitch. Okay. The chancellor and Wordsworth. They have to team up. They're both outcasts from society. Right before the bomb goes off in the room. I'm sorry, let me start again. Right before the bomb goes off in the room, the chancellor's like, Wordsworth, we can get out of here. I think we can make this world worth living in for the two of us. And Wordsworth's like, I don't know. We're from two different worlds. We look at things differently. Like everything I know is completely different from everything you know. I would be a fish out of water in a buddy situation with you, Chancellor. Chancellor, who is like some sort of police officer.
A police chancellor.
He's like a police chancellor. You're like a police man.
Yeah.
And the chancellor says, listen, you let us out of this room. We'll go solve mysteries, all the mysteries that are facing this society. We'll make it better. And that's when Wordsworth says, all right, in this black and white world we live in, maybe we can shed some color, bring some color to this black and white world. The show would be called Black and Not So White. What do you guys think of that? What do you think?
And then after the title card, cut to Chancellor holding a person made of books, and he goes, can I bring my book wife?
My book.
And then he's like, you have sex with that? He goes, uh-huh.
Dude, wait, I got it. And then the sequel will be called Shades of Grey.
Shades of Grey.
50 Shades of Grey. How about that?
I like
it. How about that? I don't really know what will happen in that in the sequel, but I'll come up with something pretty clever. Maybe
you know
they...
what? No, that's the book that Wordsworth is always writing. He's always working on a book throughout the series.
And that's
and then
the
it's
book.
Revealed at the end that Shades of Grey, 50 of them.
He's like, you know what?
The Sex Chronicles of Bookwoman.
Chancellor, you're pretty dominant. I'm pretty submissive. Maybe we could explore our sexuality together. I don't know. It's this black and not so white world we live in.
Anything's possible.
50 shades of carrots in a cauldron. I don't know.
Did I tell you I got a book dick?
A book dick. Oh my god.
I got. Crumpled up pages for balls.
And he's like, man, it's...
Gosh, I'd like that we could bring it back to Earth with this segment.
Wait, does the book dick smell like mildew and handled leather? Because if it does...
Yeah, it smells like a Hardy Boys book.
Oh my god. Everybody knows what that smells like. Oh my god.
This book stinks, but I guess it's kind of charming.
Yeah, I guess it's okay.
Rewind to Dom Muschietti, third grade, taking out a Hardy Boys book in the library, and he's like, what if somebody's dick smelled like this? Fast forward 20 years later.
Oh my,
here we are. Here dreams we are. Do come true.
Oh my god, dude, it's so good.
What are we watching next week, Mike?
I don't know. I can't come back from that. All right, so next week, let's we explored two series. We've explored one anthology. Let's explore another anthology, a show presented by Steven Spielberg.
People may not have seen ever.
I'm going to guess that no one in our listening audience has ever seen this. Prove me wrong. Leave me a comment. Leave us a comment.
Yes.
Saying otherwise. We're going to watch Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories. In fact,
amazing.
I don't think his name... It's from 1985, an anthology fantasy series where, again, every episode or every week there was a different episode. We're going to watch the first episode entitled Ghost Train. Too spooky for you. Let me tell you, fantastic episode. You know what? I'm not going to tell you. You
that's
guys
how
got
it goes.
That's how it goes. It goes. And it's like, it's a spooky ghost train, you guys.
Ghost train. Can we work on spin-offs?
Yeah.
Yeah,
all right, here it is.
Right now.
No, wait. We gotta wait till next week for that.
Listen, guys. You should totally give us your spin-offs. Write in about them. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe we could. Maybe write a fantasy fiction about them.
Maybe.
Not that fantasy fiction. Like another regular fantasy.
Like a sexy one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one. But at the time when the series came out, Steven Spielberg was he was on top of the world. He was a premier filmmaker for the last 10 years. I mean, Batteries Not Included didn't do so great, but like, you know, he made Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Temple of Doom at that point. And you know, Jaws. I don't know if anybody ever saw that or whatever. But anyway,
what's that? But movie at
the
time,
this show was not preceded with his name, which a lot of the things he produced later in his life would, including Animaniacs, which I'm sure some of our audience has seen. It was Steven Spielberg presents the Animaniacs. But this show, Amazing Stories, was created by Spielberg, produced by him, and the first episode we're watching also directed by Spielberg. I told Dom and Josh about this before we started recording the podcast. It's a half hour movie. You're gonna love it. You're probably gonna watch it twice.
I've never seen it.
I saw it a long time ago, and I do not really remember it. Does it take place on Christmas, Mike?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, then that might have been a Tales from the Dark
Side episode. It's so intense. Fantastic. Amazing Stories, first episode, Ghost Train, for the next episode, episode 4 of Syndication Station. I think there's a lot of shows out there that we have to watch. We have to watch a lot of episodes of that show. We have to watch. Oh my God! What we were talking about watching another series? Just
Bookman,
the Young Indiana Jones. Bookman, we gotta watch.
Bookman,
dude. Bookman and Chancellor. And that's the theme song title. Is the theme song to McCormick and Hardcastle again,
again,
or Hardcastle and McCormick. Excuse me. Yeah. drive like the demon of your dreams.
That's so beautiful. Good.
Thank you so much. Guys, I can't thank you enough for everybody, not these guys, you guys out there, listeners, viewers, listeners, thank you so much for contributing so much to the show, for giving us so much to talk about. What a constructive dialogue, too, that's taking place between you and
what
us.
What an excuse to make me watch more TV.
Exactly.
I love it. It's fantastic. I don't want to swing off anybody's nuts for too long, but...
I want to say something real quick. I'm going to say this.
I love you guys. I was going to say,
hey guys, if you liked this episode, if you enjoyed this episode, you enjoyed a previous episode, if you thought the first one stunk, hey, that's okay, but you stuck with us. Go ahead and hit the subscribe button on iTunes. And if you like the show, leave a review and write whatever you want. It really helps the show. It's going to help more people enjoy the show. And we really appreciate it. And thank you to everyone who's already done it. It's really helped. Quite a few listeners, new listeners to last week's episode.
It was incredible. Dom, you said it perfectly. I mean, we can't thank you enough for all the positive feedback and for making us so excited. I mean, we were pretty excited to do the show, but then seeing how much you guys enjoy it, we're ecstatic. This is all sort of building towards a reveal maybe next episode about how excited we are to do this show. So stay tuned. Keep listening. Tell your friends to listen. Leave us the 5-star reviews. Of course, that gets our show further out there to more people and whatnot. You might see the show on YouTube shortly, and you might be getting a lot more of this show weekly in the coming weeks, in the near future. We'll see.
Well, so. You don't have to leave a 5-star review. You leave whatever kind of review.
You leave a goddamn 5-star review or I'm coming to your house with Bookman and we're going to tear that shit up. We'll make your dick smell like mildew.
Bookman does. He will tear it up like a page in a bad book.
If there isn't fan art of Bookman by next week, my heart's going to be broken. I don't know.
You're off the show. You're quitting.
I'll leave the show. So that's actually a great way to get me off the show for people who don't want me to be on the show. So. But guys, listen, thank you again so much. And Dom, Josh, I love you. And I'm so happy I can do this with you.
Hey, me too. Hey, guys.
I love you.
We had a great time. Hope you did.
I love you.
Peace out to my homies. One love.
Josh. Josh, I love you.
I love you guys.
Thank you. I just wanted to
say something cool like I did.
Hey, I'll try my best. I think that you next time. Get on it.
Mufasa rules.
Strong intro. Awesome outro.
I like Mufasa.
Mufasa rules. That's great.
Mufasa is dope.
Yeah, I'm going to stop. Mufasa's dope. Just leave all this in. Just leave
rip,
all this
rip
in.
Mufasa.
Rip
Mufasa.
Goodbye, everyone.
Don't hold this against us. You hold this against us.